and then that the garbage pull then that was done a few days before, basically, what's the word? Well, again, corroborates that connected time. The I have it here.
Did the district court give the May 18th traffic stop evidence enough weight in analyzing whether there was ongoing criminal activity?
I don't know that it did. Certainly if, and maybe I'm reading the order incorrectly, the way I read the court's order is that it that the May 2018 and the September incident gave probable cause for the search warrant, that those two things together did that. And then I think what Your Honor is asking is, then in reviewing whether or not there was staleness, did the court essentially just decide, oh, well, I found that those two things supported probable cause, but now I'm going to throw out that one from May in analyzing this. And I think that is accurate. I think that is correct. I don't think the court did give that enough weight. And I think that's really at the heart of the state's concern when I was talking about how when you use, I guess what the state's really saying is that it seems inconsistent within the case itself to at one point say, yep, these 2 points 4 months apart are good, they're valid, they're a good reason to issue a warrant, but we're going to basically ignore the one and just use the most recent and then say that, well, since it's just one and not two, we're going to throw it out when there are 2 points to make a straight line to this third incident at the search warrant. I do think that's a problem. As far as, well, I think I guess I've kind of already said that. And one of the issues the state has is if the court, if this court were to uphold, to not reverse, what the state's concern is that this basically opens up, it basically would create a new law. It would say if the only thing we have is, you know, a snort tube, and this other thing 4 months ago that we're just going to kind of not pay any attention to, that after 3 days you're done. Because that's all. The court says after 3 days from the finding of the snort tube, we still have probable cause. But 3 days later, total of six, it goes. That's not good. And the court doesn't explain why. I can't determine why from day three to day six, all of a sudden probable cause goes away.
Well, I mean, there is a standard for, you don't challenge, I presume, Soto's factors for determining whether probable cause has become stale, like the ongoing criminal activity, the article's innocuous versus right?
Sure, no,
okay,
certainly
so
not.
On page 10, there's that standard described by Soto, and I don't see much argument about whether the district court made a mistake in deciding that the evidence was incriminating and easily disposed of and not of enduring utility. The argument seems to be around whether there is ongoing criminal activity, or am I wrong about
No, that is primarily where the state's coming from.
Okay.
Correct.
And so you're telling us that as a matter of law, on de novo review, the district court erred in considering and determining then that there was no ongoing criminal activity?
Correct.
Okay. And so what is the best case that we would look at to say that the district court as a matter of law was wrong in deciding that there was not ongoing criminal activity?
I don't know that the state has pointed to a specific case I don't think I have a good answer for that question is my short answer. The longer answer is I think it's certainly within all of the cases that are cited with 6 days, 7 days, 8 days, it's certainly within all of those. I didn't find a case, and perhaps counsel will prove me wrong, of where something less than six was thrown out under similar facts. So I'm sort of maybe making an absence of authority argument as opposed to here's my case that shows why I'm right.
And for possession, I mean, I think some of the briefing is around, well, but these other cases, there were controlled buys, it was about an ongoing sales activity, et cetera. Here what we have is two acts of possession.
Correct.
Separated by 4 months. I mean, you would agree, obviously, because at some point, it becomes stale.
Sure,
right?
Certainly.
In a year, we know it's stale.
Right.
In between 6 days and a year, how do we decide with respect to two acts of possession as a matter of law when something becomes, is no longer an ongoing criminal activity?
That's a really good question, obviously, and it's at the heart of it. And I mean, just to keep things super simple, 10 days, we're done. Like, without question. You know, we don't even have to think about it past that. But I think there is a connection between the length of time of the incidents that are relied upon by the court in issuing the warrant to give probable cause and the length of time before something goes stale. You know, I think that there needs to be some connection between those two things. Because, you know, the best predictor of future is what we've seen in the past. And if a court is saying, here's a thing, here's a thing, here's a thing, here's a thing that all give me probable cause, or I believe allows me to find probable cause to issue a search warrant, the further and back in time those go, the closer to the end of that 10 days that should allow before something goes stale. But I think those two things are logically connected. And I think that's part of the disconnect that the state saw in this order, is that when you're relying on two things 4 months apart, but then somewhere between 3 and 6, poofs, maybe that's where the line is. Maybe we're wrong, and maybe 6 days is where the line is on 4 months. I don't know. But it just didn't make, there wasn't common sense that we could see in that.
How does the evidence in this case, the evidence from the May traffic stop and then the subsequent garbage search demonstrate that the probable cause wasn't stale after approximately 6 days?
Well, I think the nature of, well, and this goes to part of the disagreement here is the state's characterization of, or the state's argument of these facts in our brief, which is that drug use, which again, not a crime, possession's a crime, sale is a crime, use is not necessarily a crime, so we're talking about possession, but I just want to make sure I'm clear about that, is that when someone, it seems odd to me that sale, that like an ongoing series of sales is somehow more probative, or what do you want to say, more likely to generate probable cause than ongoing possession. That seems odd to me. And that distinction does seem to be there in the case law, and I don't get that.
Where in the case
law? Well, just because it seems that it's always pointing towards, you know, I believe it was, you know, Ward talks about the single instance of a sale, right. Things like that.
I was just wondering if it happened to be that those were sales cases, as opposed to distinguishing, like, have the courts ever said possession is different than sales, or did they just happen to be sales cases?
It may be they just happen to be sales cases, and, you know, those are probably more likely to be appealed, certainly.
Aren't they more likely to be prosecuted?
Not where I prosecute. But fair enough. Certainly places that have a lot more stuff on their plate are probably going to have to make those choices. We're going to go after the sale than the possession.
Well, you're entitled to prosecute possession. It's a crime.
Sure. No, certainly. But the way I understood what Your Honor just said was that it's more likely to even prosecute a possession than a sale. And we at least...
I think the case law bears that out.
My personal experience doesn't bear that out. We prosecute far more possession cases than we do sales cases.
The case law, the published case law.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was misunderstanding. Yes, certainly the published case law. Yes, certainly. I misunderstood what you were saying. I thought you meant in all prosecutions, what's more likely to be prosecuted, a sale or a possession. So now I apologize. I'm not sure where our question was at.
Well, your time is waning, but you have some time left.
Oh, but I wasn't sure if I answered the question.
That's fine.
Okay, I apologize. So, well, to where I was getting at with this, my concept of, or, you know, this argument of that when you have evidence, and in this case, corroborated evidence of ongoing possession indicating use, that indicates an issue of addiction. And we know, as a practical matter, the crime of methamphetamine possession isn't just this, I'm going to possess it. I'm possessing it to use it. And it's an incredibly addictive drug. And when you are able to draw points on a line of an individual or individuals in this case, who keep being on this line of being in contact with that drug, it indicates, I think strongly, that there's an addiction issue here. And when we are talking about a highly addictive substance, probable cause, more likely than not, that we're going to find this thing in this place, also increases the time before staleness becomes an issue. I think that's a relevant factor to consider. But I will yield the balance of my time unless you have any questions.
We'll give you a chance for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Respondent.
Morning. May it please the court. I'm Mark Nyvold, representing respondent Mr. Fettig. Let me start with the questions the court began with, which was the May 28, 2018 incident and how that factored in here. That was what the court basically hung its hat on in terms of finding probable cause to issue the warrant. Okay. Once you get to the delay in executing it, the May 2018 incident has very tenuous connection or relevance to that.
Well, because, that's your argument.
Yes, and it does. On what basis does having 3 grams of meth in a car Mr. Fettig was found in 4 months earlier somehow mean that the police can wait more than 3 days to execute the warrant? I mean,
but counsel, shouldn't the court have considered the May 18th traffic stop evidence along with the evidence from the garbage pull in considering whether there was ongoing criminal activity, which is one of the factors under State v. Souto?
Well, the court considered whether there was continuing criminal activity, but you've got 4 months separating the May 2018 to September 14, 2018. That's a long time. And it was a small amount of meth, and it isn't even clear what Mr. Soto's connection to it was. He was in the car. It wasn't his car. He wasn't driving it. So how does that somehow mean that the court erred in finding that there was no continuing activity? And that's a factual question. Continuing activity is a factual matter. They had nothing like that. All they had is a snort tube on September 14th with meth residue. Now, that's much more relevant to whether there was the likelihood that if they waited more than 3 days, they'd find something.
Can you point me to where in the district court's order the district court considers the May 18th traffic stop in analyzing whether there was ongoing criminal activity?
The court didn't specifically address that, but it's clear the court had in mind all the things that had been alleged in the warrant that go to probable cause. And I think the court looks at it as, okay, they've got probable cause, they can get the search warrant, and in fact, I'll even give you, the 3 days you waited to between getting the warrant and executing it, if you execute it right when you get it, I'll give you the issue. There's no staleness issue. Even though they waited 3 days after finding the snort tube to get the warrant. The judge says, okay, you go in that day, you're fine. But then it's 6 days after they find the snort tube that they execute the warrant. So you've got a 6-day delay.
Well, the court was very careful in saying 5 days and 20 hours.
Yes, yes. 4 hours short of 6 days. So the court is not making either an error of law or a factual error in saying that we've got 6 days between the last indication of meth use or meth activity and executing the warrant, that's too long. How does finding 3 grams of meth in a car Mr. Fettig was in 4 months earlier somehow make, there had to be a continuing activity. 4 months earlier, we found some meth in the car. The court's not unreasonable in not crediting that as a basis to say, well, no, you get more than 3 days to execute it.
Doesn't the record show that appellant and the woman who resided at the residence show that they left that residence in May and then were later stopped?
Yes.
So there's a connection between the traffic stop and the residence?
Yes, 4 months. Well, a tenuous one, yes. I mean, the meth could have been in the car all the time. May never have been in the residence. But again, that's 4 months earlier.
Why would the May incident be relevant to determining probable cause on the date of issuing the warrant, but be utterly unrelated to the question of staleness?
It's not utterly unrelated. It has a connection, a very tenuous connection, a very stale connection, a very weak connection.
Do you concede it supported probable cause for the issuance of the warrant?
Well, I
you didn't challenge that.
I believe counsel did, but I think.
I mean, here on appeal, you didn't. Sorry, it was well, challenged below that.
No, we're not cross appealing on
right,
that.
Right.
But I'm not going to. I think professionally irresponsible for me if Mr. Fetty gets convicted and still has that issue available because he hasn't raised it here on a cross appeal to concede that.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say is, the court made a decision that there was probable cause. That's not at issue here, but. Okay, there was probable cause, and the court relied on the May 2018. He said that's the only thing that isn't really stale. Okay, but how does that somehow help show the court made a factual error in finding that there wasn't continuing activity of meth use or sale? I mean, that's 4 months ago. That's not a factual error in saying that that's not. That's not sufficient evidence of continuing activity. It's not a legal error. There's no case that would support saying that the court made a legal error in deciding that, well, that 3 grams of meth found 4 months earlier is sufficient to show that there's continuing activity.
Well,
clearly erroneous.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but did you just refer to a finding by the court that there was no continuing activity?
Yes, the court said that in its memorandum, that on page 11 of its order, under the two-part test, State v. Soto, the evidence obtained from the garbage pull does not rise to the level of ongoing criminal activity.
Oh.
Okay.
Well,
that is
okay,
not.
Okay, he's treating that as a single incident.
Well, the court, so because the court doesn't explicitly say, I'm finding that 3 grams found earlier is not evidence of continuing activity. I guess if you want to say he's clearly erroneous and not considering that, I think he did consider, he had all that in mind. He in fact found probable cause based on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like the court said, That May 2018 incident, that's meaningless. No, he had it in mind for probable cause, but when you get to the issue of executing the warrant and staleness, well, what have you got recently? You've got the snort tube that was there. 3 days later, they get the warrant. 3 days later, they execute it. That's a far better indication that that there's no criminal continuing activity. You had a small user amount and a residue left. That's not clearly erroneous.
Like, what's the fact being found by a district court in making this analysis of whether it's ongoing criminal activity?
That is inherently factual. It's a factual matter. Now the law establishes that as a standard, as the guidepost for this. But the facts are, is there like foot traffic going back and forth? Did they have that? Is there cars arriving all hours of the night and day? Does someone else say, yeah, there's still meth in there? Okay, those are the facts that would show continuing criminal activity. You don't have any of that. So is the district court making a clearly erroneous factual determination of no continuing criminal activity? Plus, he's got the factors of this is a small amount of meth, the residue found in the snort pipe. It's incriminating, so it's not likely to stick around long. It's easily disposable. And it's not of enduring utility. So all the court's got all the legal factors.
Right, I mean, but they're, for all we know, those facts aren't true, right? These are allegations in an affidavit. That's, I'm wondering whether it's really a fact finding? I mean, it's not like the district court found facts that, in fact, this happened on this date. In fact, that happened on this date. These are allegations that are made.
Your Honor, I'm not understanding what the allegations are.
It's assuming that the facts in the affidavit are true. The district court is deciding it is or is not ongoing criminal activity, right?
Well, on what basis would this court say that what's in the affidavit is not true? I mean, the court.
Well, I'm just wondering, when the district court is looking at it, is the district court necessarily making factual findings that what's in the affidavit is in fact what occurred, or is it just saying based on the allegations in the affidavit?
Well, obviously the court is relying on what's in the affidavit. And there's, and in fact, the cases I cite, case law, Yaritz and King, say that if you're going to rely on the fact of continuing activity to hold off on executing the warrant and try to avoid it being called a stale search, you've got to put those facts that go to continuing activity in the warrant.
Well, that's Yaritz and King. Have to rely on the warrant. I'm just wondering if it's in fact a factual finding. I'm just struggling with that, and whether the court's analysis of these factors is in fact a factual finding.
Well, in search warrant practice, the court, I mean, I can't imagine any heavier burden I would have as an attorney going in and saying, Judge, those facts aren't the facts. That's basically. Why do I remember the name of the case? When you allege that there's false statements or recklessly made statements in the warrant. And so the judge himself is not going to say, well, I'm going to find facts differently. No, he's going by what's in there.
Right. And he's accepting what's in there.
And there are no facts showing continuing activity, or they're exceedingly weak. So you've got basically a snort tube with residue, and 4 months earlier, 3 grams in a car.
You referred to that as a small amount.
A residue
isn't
amount?
No, 3 grams of methamphetamine is a felony, is it not?
Well, I'm representing someone right now who's charged with 52 pounds.
Okay, everything's relative.
Yes,
but
it is.
But 3 grams is a felony.
Yes, but the fact is still not like a large, I guess it is all relative, but it's not, if we were dealing here with 3 pounds, I would have a really hard time, I suppose, okay? But that we're not. We're dealing with 3 grams, and it's 4 months later. Now, is anyone reasonably going to say that 4 months, or over that 4 months, that 3 grams either didn't get, well, if it was found, but if it hadn't been found, that it would have been sold or consumed, okay? And well before September 14th, 2018, okay? This is a substance that's readily consumable and quickly consumed.
Isn't it evidence of the same person with the same substance? Or
well,
a person in a car with the same substance? And
we really don't know who's
I mean, not the same person. I'm sorry. The residence is what was at issue, right? And so it's evidence of, you know, the individuals in the car resided at this residence where the garbage pull was at. So there's a connection between the two, correct? Same substance.
I'm not sure that they are residing together. I'd have to check the record. They may have been.
But I think the record shows that, yes. That was my reading of it yesterday.
Yeah, but all they would say, all they could say in the affidavit is the car came from the residence. They can't say it was in the residence, all right? And again, that's 3 grams 4 months earlier, and the court is not making any clearly erroneous factual determination when it says there wasn't continuing activity based on that. That I don't know how any reviewing court could say that's a clearly erroneous fact. I mean, other courts might rule differently, but how do you say the judge is here is clearly erroneous in finding no continuing activity?
So you agree with the standard of review as stated by the appellant?
Well, I agree with the one I'm stating, which is factual matters are reviewed for clear error. Legal questions are reviewed de novo. Continuing activity is an inherently factual matter. Case law says it's a factor to be considered, but that doesn't mean that in determining it, it's a question of law. That's a factual matter. And the cases, I think, make that clear. So you've got a judge who had discretion as to determine whether there was evidence of criminal activity, continuing criminal activity, did not find it, took into account the May 2018 incident, obviously for probable cause, obviously had it in mind. I think it's just so remote. I don't think the judge felt like he had to explicitly say that, but it's in the record. It's clear the court was aware of what happened in May 2018 because he gave it weight for probable cause. He just obviously didn't see how, nor do I, how that has any probative value in showing that there's continuing criminal activity, given that what they did have was just a residue in a snort tube.
So when did it become stale? I mean, it wasn't stale at the point of issuance of the warrant on day three, right? Was it day four that the warrant was issued, or day from the call?
Well, the court didn't have to decide that. The court only had to decide what's if you wait 6 days from the time you found it, you find it 3 days later, you get the warrant 3 days after. Right. That's what the court had to decide.
The court could have considered that it was stale and not issued the warrant.
I mean,
the court issued the warrant, and that's not challenged. So presumably it's not stale if they executed immediately.
I think the court in its order addressed the fact that if they had gone out promptly and executed it, there wouldn't have been a staleness issue.
And what is promptly?
Well, if you'd gone out that day, okay, but you've got six, this isn't just get the warrant and then wait 3 days. It was 6 days from when they found the meth tube. They wait 3 days to get the warrant and then 3 days to execute it, almost 3 days to execute it. That's 6 days. Now, in Yeritz and King, they said delays of 6 and 7 days were not too long, but they had their evidence of continuing criminal activity. The court didn't find that here. It's not clearly erroneous in addressing the facts and finding that there's no continuing activity, and the idea that it somehow missed the fact that, oh, I've got this May 2018. The court was aware of that.
Okay, your time is
Thank
up.
You.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly, just a couple points I want to clarify. The court was correct when it discussing Mr. Fettig and Ms. Wold were boyfriend, girlfriend. They were residing at the residence. That was correct. That's in the record. From the questions, it appears to me that the court has a pretty good handle on what's going on here and has the issue pretty much in its sights. To elaborate on it a little bit, the more I listen, it occurs to me that the respondent is essentially arguing that there's a different quantum of evidence required to find probable cause at the issuance of a warrant as opposed to the execution of the warrant. And I suppose what we're talking about then is staleness really is really all we're left with there, because probable cause is probable cause. But the question that the state keeps asking itself, and I think the question that the court is at least pondering, is what about 4 months and 3 days as opposed to 4 months and 6 days to make something stale? And that's what the
respondent argues, that the main incident is so remote that it really doesn't have any connection with the garbage pull.
And I that is their argument.
So what is the connection?
The connection is that it's the same people coming from the same place with the same substance, 4 months apart. The only way that that's tenuous in any way is time, not the people, not the place, not the substance, which in part goes to the state's argument about the continuing nature or the nature of the continuing use of addictive substances. I don't think that the district court was clear enough. Let me put it this way. If the district court intended to wholly discount the May 2018 event for the purposes of staleness, it doesn't say that.
Well, what about the statement on page 11 of the order, in which the district court stated that the evidence obtained from the garbage pull does not rise to the level of ongoing criminal activity? And that's a quote. Is that a finding? Is that a legal determination? What deference do we give it?
I I think it's both. I mean, I think that is the court is making a factual finding as to this thing was in this place. But then I think expanding that to that means there isn't continuous use. I mean, I think that's more of a mixed question. Honestly, I don't know that you can solidly put it in one or the other. I understand. I don't know. I just don't. And the reason that the legal question comes in is because if what respondent wants to argue is that by not including the May incident specifically in that sentence, by saying I'm throwing out the May, I'm only using this, that impliedly means the court threw it out or considered it and rejected it. I mean, I think that has to be more explicit in the order. What I essentially heard respondent arguing is that it was so remote and that the court didn't even need to put it in the order. I think that's generous.
Well, the fact that the court, you know, found that it wasn't ongoing, and I mean, presumably everything that it decided, I mean, does it have to mention everything that would, does it have to mention and discard everything when it's saying it's not an ongoing criminal activity? And can't we assume that fact doesn't lend it?
I think where the court has found that it provided probable cause for the issuance of the warrant, but then discards it for whether or not it's stale 3 days later, it does need to talk about it. It needs to say why this was good enough here, but it's not good enough here. 3 days is pretty narrow.
So, I can't really see the clock.
About 30 seconds.
And so, opposing counsel states that the question of whether there was ongoing criminal activity is a factual question that's reviewed on a clearly erroneous standard of review. And you are saying your belief is that it's a mixed question?
No, I believe that's a factual question, and I believe the court got it wrong by saying that these 2 points, 4 months apart, I think that's factually erroneous.
Okay. All right. The case is very interesting. It's been well argued, and it is taken under advisement.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
We are in recess until our next oral case.